So thanks for coming to saying goodbye to your digital self. For those of you who are tweeting, the hashtag is SXDigitalMe. And we're going to be discussing the challenges and issues surrounding preserving our online histories with a bit of a specific focus on the social web and user-generated content. And I'm really excited today because we have three really diverse, great panelists up here who have made it their job to save your data. So we're going to start off with them introducing themselves and telling us what they do.
Hi, my name is Alexis Rossi. I work for the Internet Archive. We're a nonprofit digital library. You can go to the library at archive.org. We started out by archiving the internet, so you can actually go look at the internet back to 1996 via the Wayback Machine, which is one of the projects I run there. And we also archive audio, video, images, software, texts. We have about 3 million books that you can get for free. So it's basically a memory institution that is dedicated to saving digital culture and making sure it's available for the foreseeable future.
Awesome. My name is Brian Fitzpatrick. I am the founder and leader, engineering leader of Google's Data Liberation Front, which is a team that works to make sure that it's easy and possible for you to take any data out of Google that you put into it or create inside of it. So that would be your photos, blog posts, Gmail, YouTube videos, etc., that sort of thing. And from a sort of archivist point of view, my concern in general is with people putting more data in the cloud that they are working to basically track, keep an eye on, and preserve their digital legacy.
My name is Duncan Smith. I'm a member of Archive Team, which is a group of about 20 to 50 people. It's entirely volunteers. We have no particular structure. It's sort of a duocracy, as you might have heard that phrase. And we sort of act like volunteer firefighters or something. We if a site announces that it's shutting down, like GeoCities did in 2009, then we go in with scripts and disk space and bandwidth and just pull the entire site, all the user-generated content. We try and store it up so it's in a easily distributable package that's useful to people in the future.
Great. So I'm Dana Herlihy. I'm moderating the panel, and I have I'm not an archivist at all. I actually work for an interactive production company called Stitch Media in Toronto. But I propose this panel out of general interest as a user. I've been documenting my life online for like 15 years, and I'm 27, so that's more than half my life. And in various formats too, so you know, blogs, video, etc. And while I'm not going to ever share that blog I wrote when I was 17 and angsty and pissed off at my parents, and I'm not really looking to reconnect with my MySpace friends, there is a lot of comfort knowing that those digital artifacts of my life that I once attached a lot of meaning to still exist. And this is actually a big problem because a lot of people like me think that these things we put online have this sense of like permanence. But as we've seen with GeoCities and as we've seen with Friendster, they don't. These companies that are managing this data are companies, and they can go under, they can reposition themselves, and they can delete tons and tons of user-generated content with very little warning. So that has an effect, obviously, on the individual user who is maybe not ready to give up that part of their digital life, but it also has further-reaching ramifications as well, which kind of leads me into our first point of the discussion, which is when we're talking about the social web and we're talking about preserving our online identities and the content that we've put up, why is it important, essentially? You know, what are we saving and what are we at risk of losing if we don't do it? Yeah, go for it.
Okay. The Internet Archive started archiving the internet in 1996 because we felt that it was an ephemeral but meaningful format for data that no one else was saving, and that if we didn't do it, it would all just disappear. And, you know, your local library keeps newspapers around forever. They go in the garbage. If, you know, you own it, it goes in the garbage tomorrow. But the library saves it. It's a meaningful record of our daily lives that we refer to hundreds and hundreds of years later, and we don't find the silly ads and the, you know, ridiculous political posturing and things like that. That stuff's actually useful to us 200 years later. But nobody was doing that for the internet. So we chose to start doing that, and I think now we're recognizing that it is, in fact, one of the main communication mediums that we have, and that it's absolutely essential to save it. But then, you know, on a personal level, what do you choose to save? Depending on whether you are a techie person or not. My mother is not a techie person, but every camera she's had for the last 10 years is digital. And if she doesn't print that stuff out, where does it go? When my parents pass away, heaven forbid, you know, what happens to that stuff? Where is it? There's no shoebox of photos, per se, to continue that stuff. So I think having everything digital at this point, we risk losing everything if we're not careful with how we preserve that data and move it forward into the future.
Awesome. Do either of you want to follow up on that?
I agree. but seriously, I think people don't attach a lot of weight to what things that are more ephemeral, whether it's email, tweets, or that sort of stuff. But I think there is a lot of value, and I think it is of interest to people. And given the fact that copying your data on the internet, for the most part, is pretty darn easy, pretty darn cheap, and pretty darn quick, I think it's important for people to think about keeping multiple copies in multiple places as a way of archiving your, it's sort of your, it's, it is your digital legacy. It's what, it's like you talk about the shoebox, right? I mean, I have a shoebox of photos and letters from my grandparents and my great-grandparents. It's very valuable to me. And if we don't start thinking about this, our kids are going to have a shoebox of air. And that's really not optimal.
Yeah, on Archive Team, we take a sort of a different approach. Internet Archive is they're focused on like the next 50 to 400 years or whatever. But our archive team, we kind of focus on the next 3 to 5 years. And so like when GeoCities went down, we downloaded, well, a couple of months before that went down, we started downloading and we got somewhere over a terabyte of GeoCities. And then we held on to it and we didn't sit on it. We were shoveling it around and curating it. But that took about a year. And so a year later, we released this torrent and people are like, wow, I've been missing this. And we did the same thing with Friendster, and that's our horizon.
And I know, like, you have talked about, Alexis, archiving a lot of stuff at the Internet Archive. You're pretty much archiving everything. And right now we're kind of at this, like, really interesting point where we're documenting our lives at an, like, unprecedented rate. Blog posts about everything, the Twitter statuses about what I had for lunch today. I'm pretty sure I did that, actually. At what point do any of you draw the line and say, okay, maybe we're saving too much? Like, at what point do you just say the, you know, David Coulier picture a day Tumblr just isn't going to get in?
Well, we definitely don't archive everything, unfortunately, because we don't have the technical ability or the budget to do that. But, you know, as an archivist, I kind of feel like it's not necessarily my job to decide what's important. So when we go out to archive the internet, we grab what we can find. And sometimes we do things in a very directed way, like when GeoCities announced they were going down. We very purposely went and tried to archive as much of GeoCities as we could get. But we're limited. There's only so much we can do. But I think that the person creating the content is the person who should decide what gets saved.
Cool. I think we're actually going to, yeah, we'll touch on that too as we go on. So we're at South by Southwest 2012, and we talk about, you know, things coming up, digital innovation, and today we're going to talk about GeoCities, web hosting service founded in 1994. In January 1999, Yahoo bought GeoCities for like $3 billion in stock. And then in April 2009, 10 years later, Yahoo shut down their U.S. offices, and in October, the servers became inaccessible. At that point, the site had about 38 million user-created pages, and I know that the archive team and the Internet Archive did work to preserve GeoCities, and Duncan, you spoke a little bit about this already, but I'm wondering if both of you can talk a little bit more about what each team did and what challenges you guys were faced with when you tried to preserve or archive GeoCities.
I'll talk about that. So Archive Team was actually pretty new then. I believe it was pretty close to our founding moment. And so we had 15 to 30 people, I think. And so it was really an ad hoc operation. Like, we would generate lists of URLs, and then you would download the list of URL and mark on the wiki that it was yours, and then feed it into the crawler that you download and install. And then I forget the process for delivering the data to the central storage point, but it was similarly ad hoc, and it was sorted out while it was happening. And since then, we've got a lot more organized, but the hard part was finding URLs to start crawling from, and so that was an interesting exercise. I'm a moderator on a large community website, and so I pulled the entire user database and got all the GeoCities URLs from the homepage links. And then we would like pump a dictionary through Google with site:geocities.com and see how many pages showed up and start from all of those. But it's really hard to find places to start crawling from. And that continues to be difficult issue for things we do now.
Yeah, we started in a similar way by basically running dictionaries through Google to try to find as many user pages as we could to start with. We did actually make attempts to contact Yahoo and try to get them to help us. Yeah, and I think that the Internet Archive has a little bit of an advantage there because we're kind of a more established organization. But our experience with this and with Friendster and other sites like that are going down is generally they've fired everybody at that point and there is nobody to help us. even if they wanted to. Yahoo did actually help us a little bit by taking the rate limiting off for us when we were trying to crawl. But they wouldn't even, I know this is the same for Duncan, they wouldn't help us get a list of users. They wouldn't tell us how many users there were, so we would know how far along we were. It was, we had actually never really tried to do that big of a concentrated crawl before with that kind of deadline where the stuff's just going to be gone. So it was a learning process for us, absolutely, and I 100% know for sure we didn't get everything. We did our best, and hopefully between us and the archive team and what was the other one? O-Cities. There might have been
there's
one or O-Cities two others.
O-Cities and
Rio-Cities,
too.
Yes, O-Cities and Rio-Cities.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we managed to get a reasonable amount of it. One of the nice things about the archives crawl is that it's accessible through the Wayback Machine. So it's kind of non-geek accessible.
they sucked up our crawl, too.
Yes, we did, although it hasn't been incorporated into the Wayback Machine yet, unfortunately. But it was a learning experience, and we've tried every time since then to contact sites when they're going down, but we never get any help, unfortunately.
So. Yeah, that was going to be my follow-up question, was whether or not the difficulty you face with Yahoo is consistent even now, like 3 years later.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we've given up on asking. No one ever responds. Like, I've personally sent like 8 or 9 requests and gotten maybe two responses. One is, yeah, I'll help you, and then I never heard from the guy again. And the other one was, no.
Is it just that they're not prepared for backing up for archiving their data?
I think part of it is that, but I think a big part is just that they've already decided that they're killing this service,
right.
Or they weren't supporting it really in the first place. So anybody who knew anything about the service is already gone.
Right.
You know, so there's that. And then honestly, I can see Yahoo's point at a certain level that they're not going to want to hand over a list of user identities to some random organization. So, there are issues there, legitimate ones.
For sure. And it's been 3 years since it shut down. What's the response been from the GeoCities community or the people that were on GeoCities? I know you put up, the archive team put up a torrent and yours is accessible. Have you heard anything from people who are accessing this?
I've heard from people who can't find their stuff that we missed. Like a lot. And they're really upset.
Yes. I get that as well. I told a story to Dana yesterday that she wanted me to be sure to share with you guys. We get a lot of requests for people who are trying to find their things that they can't find. And this is not the only time this has happened, but a particular incident, I got an email from a mom who had put up a memorial site on GeoCities for her son who had died, and she, you know, her hard drive had crashed. She lost the photos that were on that website, and she desperately wanted those photos. And we didn't have them. You know, we just hadn't gotten that far. And it's heartbreaking to have to say, you know, say to somebody, you know, I'm sorry you put all of this love into this page that may look silly to us now. You know, I mean, they do look a little amateurish and sad. But, you know, you put all of this love and effort into it, and it's just gone.
Right.
You know, it's just gone.
Right. Right. So do you want to say anything on that? Or
I think, I mean, the angle that I take is that I'm trying to raise awareness for people that they need to keep an eye on their data.
Yes.
Right? So as opposed to this woman who came to you however many years later and is like, do you have my stuff? No, I'm really upset about that. I would love for people to hear GeoCities is going down and oh my God.
They did.
There should be...
Sorry, go what? Ahead. Go ahead.
You can jump in.
All right. Well, they didn't actually tell anybody. They hit it deep in their FAQ of like, you know, why can't I upload new files? Well, because of the shutdown.
So there's two parts to that. One I would hope that people could find out about it, that they make a noise about it. And two, that when they find out about it, there's an easy way for them to personally take their data out.
They didn't have
and,
a download
and
thing.
Keep that, right? Yeah. So there should be an easy way to do that. And that is, I think it's very important if you're a company and you're going to end of life a product, that you make it easy for your users to take their data out of their product. I think having control over your data and things, your creations is very important.
Yeah, that's actually a great point to follow up on, because the next one we talk about is Friendster. That's funny. So Friendster was an early social networking site, as we all know. It went down in 2011, so just a year ago. And they did offer users an option to extract their data, but they gave them about a month. The announcement was made in March, and a month later, they were gone. Actually, the user profiles remained, but anything that the user had put up to Friendster before it was a social networking, social gaming site, was deleted. So photos, blog posts, etc. And there was a really great article in the New York Times about the effect this was actually having on people who had, you know, met partners through Friendster and such. And I know that, again, the archive team at Internet Archive worked to save Friendster or preserve it. But it was a bit of a different relationship this time, and I was wondering if you guys could talk about what happened there and how it all came about.
Sure. So we actually hired Jason Scott, who's sitting over there, to work with Internet Archive, and as a software on a software preservation project. But he's also part of Archive Team, so we had a little bit more of a relationship going at that point, and we didn't have the resources internally when, you know, there was such a short period of time. We didn't have time to. You know, basically interrupt what we were doing with the few resources that we have in order to try to grab Friendster. And we actually relied mostly on Archive Team to save it for us. And it was a fairly large amount of data. So I think hopefully having a place to put it at that point, kind of an official place to put it, was hopefully helpful. But maybe you know more about that.
That helps a lot.
Yeah.
Because we're all volunteers, and like I've only got about a terabyte of disk space, and a lot of people in the archive team are like, oh, I've only got 600 gigs or 200 gigs, but like I'd love to help, and so we have a centralized data dump that those guys lend us. We're not formally affiliated, and so like we can have people download a bunch of stuff and then send it over to this machine, and then they have space to keep working.
Yeah.
Cool. So they gave them a month, though, to download their data. Is that enough time for users to be notified? And is that enough time for you as archivists to be notified?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
We need a year.
Pardon? A year.
A year.
And you guys but you're crawling all the time, so...
Yes.
Is it just that when there's an announcement made that something big is going down that you realize you need to... How does that work?
I'm 100% sure that we've crawled plenty of pages from Friendster over the years, but we certainly had never tried to do a directed crawl for Friendster,
right.
Like really find every user page, gather every piece of data. So it's not, 30 days is nowhere near long enough to try to do a, okay, save it all kind of crawl. It's right. Just not for that amount of data, no.
And was there any contact with Friendster at all between either of you? Or?
We tried.
Friendster was kind enough to name their user profiles numerically, so we got like every single one of the first 10 million and then some spot. Yeah. I'm not sure how much we got after that, but we definitely got the first 10 million people on Friendster, all their pictures.
Nice. And did anyone, I don't know if anyone on this panel tried, and if anyone in the audience maybe tried it, the export tool that they offer, does anyone know how efficient that was? No? Did anyone here have a Friendster account that they tried to save? No?
More importantly,
Jason?
Did anybody care?
Kind of an interesting question.
Did you use the export tool?
No.
No? Okay. Because he doesn't need to. All right, cool. Let's just jump into to the bigger questions, challenges. So what are the technical challenges for archiving data right now, and what do you think will be the challenges as we proceed forward? So with looking at, you know, social networks that exist now and things that we're seeing coming up as well.
One common problem with social networks is that you have to log in to view things. But like sometimes you can log in to view things that are semi-public, so it's public once you're logged in. And I'm pretty sure that the Internet Archive doesn't do that, but our archive team, we are totally okay with registering accounts for our bots and then like not having them friend anyone. So that's a common problem in social network sites.
Yeah. As Duncan was saying, we tend to only archive things that are public. We don't go behind passwords. We don't go into secure areas of websites for various reasons. One of them, we feel basically like it's just a better citizenly kind of way to behave. You know, if your expectation is that your Facebook profile is private, I don't want to be the jerky organization that says, no, all of your stuff belongs to me, you know. So that's a big one. But, you know, then you have other social networks like Twitter that actually limit you. So I could archive all of Twitter, but they won't let me.
Really?
Yeah.
How come?
They want you to pay them tens of thousands of dollars a year for the full feed of Twitter.
And if you go to someone's profile, you can only get the last 1,000 or 2,000 posts.
Yeah. So as much as we would love to do that and even, you know, have an agreement with them saying we won't make it public for a year or 2 years or however long, they won't do that. That's how they, you know, it's part of the way that they make money. So
interesting. I know, Brian, you had some interesting thoughts on the cloud as well that maybe you want to toss in here.
Well, I mean, I've got a million thoughts in the cloud. I think it's hard to say what is enough time or what we should do as far as the technical challenges of social networks. I think requiring login for data that's public can be difficult. I think the hard thing is that over time, when people delete their data, which I think you should be able to do, I think that you should control your data, which includes deleting it. And that's one thing when it's your data. It's a post that you've written. But it tends to get to the point where you're changing a story when it's a conversation or a stream of comments in a blog post or something like that. And I don't know that we have an answer to that yet, but when let's say all of us could have a big conversation on a blog post, and I could come back later because I've been swearing at you guys and delete all my comments, you look back and it doesn't make any sense. And that's a problem because we're no longer copying things around like you do with email. I send you an email, you get a copy. I delete my copy, you still got your copy, that sort of thing. I think that when you have, it gets even more challenging when you're collaboratively writing something. So let's say you have a document, a shared document on the web, and let's say it's my document, and I share it with you, we write it together, and then you end up writing 10,000 words, and I write like 2,000 words, and then I get mad at you one day, I delete it. Mm-hmm. It's gone. Now, is it really fair of me to do it? Probably not. What does copyright law say? Well, you know, copyright came into existence in the 1700s, and I'm pretty sure they didn't know about the internet. So I think there's a lot of things that we as a society need to think of, and not from the legal point of view, but more from the point of view of what is right from a historical perspective, from a preserving a perspective of trying to preserve the story, because we're changing the way we're storing data and we're changing the way we're moving it around.
Right. And I was also thinking about, as well, something like YouTube or Facebook, for example, where there is just so much data. If they were to announce that they were going down, mm-hmm. would you have the capacity to actually archive that?
Absolutely not.
We'd be screwed.
One of the things
we
do.
Think of the cat videos.
I know. One of the things we do with YouTube, for example, is we search Twitter for mentions of YouTube videos, and we archive those YouTube videos. So we are trying to archive some of YouTube, but there is no possible way in hell that we could actually archive all of YouTube. And, you know, probably we wouldn't necessarily want to, although being an archivist, it makes me crazy to say that, but, you know.
Right.
I want it all. But, no, it's just, it wouldn't be possible at all. Even if they handed their servers to us, we couldn't afford to run them and host them and have bandwidth, and there's no way.
Right. And what about mobile content? Have you guys started thinking about that? Stuff like Instagram, for example.
Yeah.
That's an idea. I was thinking the other day of actually archiving the Android App Store.
Hmm. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Any ideas on how that would go about?
Nope. I haven't looked into it at all. It just seemed like a good idea.
When we crawl the internet, we actually crawl as a regular browser. We could also crawl as a mobile browser. Mm-hmm. Right now, we just don't have the resources to double our crawling to do something like that. So we're actually not archiving anything as a mobile device.
Okay, interesting. Good to know. Back up your
Save
phones.
Save your stuff, people.
And when you talk about saving these things, like 100 to 200 years down the line, how do we ensure that they're still going to be accessible mm-hmm. 200 years down the line? I mean, we've already seen how fast computers have changed in 25 years. And 200 years, who really knows, right? We could be right. robots. So how do we ensure that this data we're preserving is going to be able to be read by the future robots?
Well, the archive does lots of work to try to keep things current. We always keep the original files that we had. So, for example, we have about 500,000 movies online. And when iPhones came out, however many years ago that was, the iPhones couldn't play our videos, any of them. So we went back and we re-derived 500,000 movies into a format that an iPhone could play, or as many of them as we could actually do that with. And we do that over and over again for all of the different media types that we have on the archive. But I'll be the Luddite on the panel and say that for personal stuff, if it's really important to me, I print it out.
Right. And I think that's something that we all were talking about yesterday, too, is the idea of actually having a physical copy of a photo, for example, yeah. and then also having the digital copy if it's actually that important to you. And that's pretty much your best backup, is ensuring you have both.
Yes.
Right? So having the shoebox of photos, but also having your digital library as well. So take that home with you guys.
Yeah, we do what we can to save. We always save in the original format, and we don't change it at all. There's this file format that the Internet Archive, that their Wayback Machine takes. It's called WARC. It's like a zip file for the web. It's got all the headers and the original page. And we did GeoCities, and we just had a pile of files. And then they were like, no, guys, the proper way to archive the internet is with WARC files. But our tool didn't support WARC, so we actually patched wget, a non-interactive spider, to support WARC output. Mm-hmm. And so now we save everything in WARC, which is... it saves more than just saving it as a file.
Mm-hmm. Well, and just as we're talking about archiving data now, I'm just wondering what stuff you guys are working on now and what you're looking to, I guess, archive soon.
Do you want to speak?
I Sure, I can talk about anything. I mean, I'm not an archivist, right? I'm just here to make sure that you can get your data out of our products, right. And also to raise awareness of as people are moving more of their data. I'd like to see everyone be able to easily get their data from one place to the next. If you want to take your contact out of Gmail and go try a new service somewhere, you should be able to do that, just as you should be able to take your contacts out of another service and try Gmail. Right. There is no long-term advantage to locking your users in and through keeping their data hostage. And you know, in the cases that you're talking about are sort of extreme examples, but they happen all the time, and we're seeing that. I mean, Google does cancel products. Anybody in the room heard of Google Notebook? Nobody. Yeah, I use it. One person. And that's pretty common. That's one of the reasons we canceled it. It just wasn't very widely used. But the people who used it really loved this product. And they basically would do copy little snippets of web pages in it for later reference. And when we decided that we were going to not continue supporting that project, we had liberated the product already, so our users could take their notebooks with them. And there is a notebook competitor whose name escapes me, but they issued a press release and said, hey, notebook users, we're over here. And they put out a little YouTube video showing users how to take their notebooks and export them from Google and import them into their product. And that was fabulous. That was fabulous because the data was preserved. It was fabulous because users kept their notes, and they could leave us and come back another day for another product or something like that.
Do you happen to know how many users actually ended up exporting their data and then porting over to the competitor?
One of Archive Team's current ongoing projects is we're archiving TinyURL and all the other URL shorteners, which if you've ever used Twitter, they shorten your URLs. And so now if you just say, if you archive all of Twitter but you don't get t.co, mm-hmm. then like every single link on Twitter is broken. And so we've been doing TinyURL and like every URL shortener we can find. We wrote a scraper for that, and like we can pull down a URL shortener at some blisteringly fast rate. Another one that we've been doing is Wiki Team, which is a subcommittee dedicated to archiving wikis. So we have a program which takes advantage of the MediaWiki inbuilt exporter. So you can say, give me a copy of this wiki, and it talks to the wiki export.php script on the wiki side and just pulls all the pages, all the versions off, and it stores it in an XML format, so you can actually turn it into another wiki on another machine. And so we've released these tools publicly for other people to work with. So we help people archive their own wikis, and we provide support if they want to come into the IRC channel and ask.
I was also going to mention, we had a conversation yesterday about this too. Facebook currently also offers the ability to export or download your data, and the only person who had tried it here was Duncan.
Yep.
How do you feel about the, do you think that the Facebook export is doing what it should?
It's not doing what I want it to. It exports it as a pile of HTML files, so you can browse it on your computer, and it's kind of like being on Facebook. It's like got the blue logo in the corner, but it's just a pile of websites. There's web pages. There's no XML files or JSON files. There's no way to import it into something else. It doesn't even resemble the original, and you get things that you posted on your wall as your status message, but you don't get things that other people posted on your wall. Like if your friend wishes you happy birthday, it's not in there. And if you wish your friend happy birthday on their wall, it's not in there either. Like, it's just like, there's no way to get comments between two people out of it. And like, I think it gives you half your messages too.
Oh, okay, so that'll actually bring us to the last slide. Oh, well, there we go. Which is the question of responsibility. I think everyone here kind of has different ideas of who's responsible for actually preserving this data. And especially when we're talking about, are we preserving it for ourselves, for our grandchildren to have, and therefore it's our responsibility to save what we think is important, or is there a corporate responsibility involved in making sure that, you know, archive teams can access this data before they go under? I'm sure all of you have different points of view on this, and so I'll leave it to you. Whose responsibility is it to preserve this data?
Well, I'll start with, if it's your personal data, it's your responsibility. In a lot of cases, your personal data, the only person who has access to that data is you. So I encourage people to ask themselves three questions before they use any online service that requires their data or that they're going to create data in. The first question is, can I get my data out in an open, portable, interoperable format? And that is the first answer that should absolutely be yes. So we're talking about open formats, not proprietary formats, not patent encumbered, not deliberately obscured. The second question is, how much is it going to cost? And that shouldn't cost me anything extra than what I'm already paying. If I'm using a free service, it should be free to get my data out. If I'm paying $20 a month, that should include the ability for me to take my data out. And the last question, which is something that people often don't think about, is how much time is it going to take me to take my data out? So if you have an online photo sharing site, and you have 5 photos in there, and you have to download them one at a time, that's no big deal. It's going to take you 2 or 3 minutes. If, however, you have an online photo sharing site with 5,000 photos, you need to call in sick for the week or take vacation and sit home and click your mouse for 53 hours, which is what we call in the industry non-optimal. So those three questions, and those we document those on our team's website, dataliberation.org, because we think they're important, and it's something that we take very much to heart. It should be, you should be able to get your data out, it shouldn't cost you anything extra, and it should be quick and easy.
And that's kind of a combination of corporate and personal, right? Because someone needs to be able to make it easy for the user to export that data.
Well, they should. There's a lot of reasons to do that. But one, I think, is that the great thing about the Internet is that never before has there existed in the world a global distribution system that costs just about nothing on the average, for the average byte sent across. So I think trust is becoming more and more important. I know that before I start using a product, I ask myself, do I trust this company? And depending on how much I trust them, I'm going to either use it more, use it less, or make sure darn sure I have a copy of everything I put in there. And I think that's something that we at Google think is important. And I think that I'm hoping that people feel more strongly about that in the future, and they put their data where their mouth is, so to speak, or where their trust is.
How about you guys? Where does the responsibility lie?
I think I personally think it fully lies on the side of the corporation. I mean, like, if I have a photo, I have pictures on Flickr. I have a couple hundred pictures on Flickr. I believe it's their responsibility. I have trust in them. I don't actually trust Yahoo, but like, let's pretend that I do. I have entrusted my data to them, and if they were to just delete it, even if they give me a year's notice, if they've just deleted it without giving me a way to get it back easily, then they have betrayed my trust. And I'm not sure I don't think there's a way to enforce it. I don't think that like, there's the, you can, we can have social norms that corporations are supposed to keep data around for me to get when they close down, but I don't think there's a really good way to enforce it other than that.
I mean, there are ways to enforce that through legislation, and I think it's much better for the industry to self-regulate than for people to behave in a poor manner, which encourages things like legislation. So I would argue it's in the corporation's best interest in that case to make it possible for you to take your data out.
Many of them disagree.
Or haven't placed much importance on it.
Yeah.
It's maybe more accurate. Personally, I think that you're responsible for your own data. It's the Internet Archive, obviously we do our best to grab things that are public that we think people might want us to save. But at the end of the day, if you have digital data, you need to be responsible for your own data. I do think that it is in a corporation's best interest to make sure that their users trust them, that they don't have a problem with putting their stuff up online, and that they can get them back out easily. I also think it would be really, really great if when they know they're going out of business, they actually contact somebody like Archive Team or like Internet Archive and actually help us save the things that their users might not have gotten around to or might not have been able to figure out how to download for themselves.
Or if the user is dead.
Yes, or if the user is dead or the user has changed email addresses so they didn't get the email or whatever it is. I think there are lots of situations in which people aren't aware or can't get back to their things or whatever. But at the end of the day, I think people need to be responsible for their own content if it's content that they care about. And that's a really difficult job to give to people, because I know that if you're not a techie, trying to figure out... I work in the tech industry and have for 15 or 20 years or however long it's been, and I have stuff I can't read, you know, sitting in a box on a floppy disk that I don't have the right kind of, you know, I mean, so if I'm falling prey to it, I can't imagine what my mother or my grandmother or, you know, whoever isn't a techie person is actually going to be able to do, which is why I actually do advocate for people to print out things that they think are very important. But at the end of the day, if they are looking for somewhere to put stuff, I actually do recommend that people put things that they don't mind being public on archive.org, because our job is to save things forever. That's what we're trying to do. I can't guarantee that we're never, ever, ever going to go away, but we do have a source of funding that hopefully will at least keep the computers on and somebody tending them for as long as we have data. So but again, it's personal. If you upload it to archive.org, expect it to be public.
And as a follow-on to that, I will say that if you have personal data that you've created somewhere and you wish to delete that data, I think that you should be able to do that if it's in it's in one of your accounts.
Yes.
Yes.
And that is part of control of your data. The thing that I'm interested in deliberation is that you have control over your data. And if you want to copy it somewhere else, you should be able to do that. If you then wish to delete it, you should also be able to do that.
And do you think that right now the tech industry is doing enough to move towards releasing data? Are you seeing this starting to become a trend, or is it still relatively new?
I think it's smaller companies I'm seeing more uptake, and I think they're realizing that it's a way of not only differentiating themselves, but gaining more user trust, since they're a small company and there's no people don't know if they're going to be acquired and shut down or if they're going to go out of business or that sort of thing. I think larger, more traditional companies I haven't seen a lot of momentum in that direction, but I think it's still young. We're still early.
Still fresh, yeah.
I've seen a lot of companies take the approach that if you give us your data, then it's ours, even if the agreement says that all we have is a license. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of corporations seem to sort of take ownership of the user data that's given to them or entrusted to them. And so they're like, no, it's ours. You can't have it. Which just doesn't make sense because it's not theirs.
Has that affected your ability to maybe archive some of that data or grab a hold of it?
I think so. I think a lot of corporations are like, well, we're gonna think that it's ours, but hide behind the being responsible to our users flag.
Right. And so what solutions would exist for users then who want to archive their online data in that situation? Or what could they do?
What was that again?
What solutions exist for users who want to archive their online data?
You're talking about a situation where...
Well, in terms of that situation, I guess also we can also talk broader scope as well. Right now, we've already kind of like mentioned Facebook, but what else exists? And archive.org too. It's for anyone on the panel.
I don't think there are a lot of options. If Facebook doesn't actually give you everything that you put on Facebook, unfortunately. Although, I mean, that's a good place to start. Go hit that button and save that file somewhere. But I'll reiterate it one more time because I hope everybody hears me. If you have pictures and letters and, you know, emails that you really care about, print them out and put them in a box. It sounds really terrible coming from me, but print them out.
I would say that I don't disagree with that.
Yeah.
More copies, the merrier. I would say it is a little bit of an extreme position, but I don't disagree with that at all. Because, I mean, if you decide to scan in a printed picture, you're going to wind up losing
absolutely.
Fidelity, right?
Absolutely.
Here's a question for the audience. How many of you here back up your computers to another hard drive? Holy cow. How many people? Keep your hands up. How many of you have lost data in the past? Is why you started backing up. There you go. That is 90% of the people I ever speak to who do backups. It's because they had a catastrophic data loss at one point.
Yeah.
And I have a friend of mine lost her, the first 3 years of her son's life in photos because her laptop was stolen. It was the only copy she had. It's a hard way to learn a lesson like that.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, on that note, we'll open it up to questions. if anyone has any, go up to the mic in the middle of the, underneath the chandelier we ordered.
I'd like to introduce some tension to the panel. You all nodded when I think it was used that suggested that users should be able to delete their data. But what if archive.org has it already and they've tried to delete it from a service? Who wins? Is preserving the culture more important or the user's rights to their data?
Oh, you mean like if somebody asks us to take something out of the Wayback Machine, should we leave it because it's culturally important? If at the moment, if somebody sends us an email and says, hey, this is my content, I don't want it in the Wayback Machine, we take it down.
Well, that's not very contentious.
I know. you know.
What if they didn't know it was in the internet?
Then why would they send you the letter?
Repeat the question. The question was, what if they didn't know it was in the Internet Archive?
Yeah.
Maybe it's what they don't know won't kill them? I don't know. I mean...
Well, it's hard to answer that question without a specific scenario in mind. But, you know, the idea is we do our best to respect people's wishes as far as whether they want things to be crawled or not. So, for example, if they have a robots.txt up that says, please don't crawl my stuff, I don't want it out there, I don't want Google to have it, I don't want the archive to have it, I don't want whoever to have it, we respect that. If they put it up retrospectively, for example, they say, oh, gosh, I've had this site up for 5 years, and it has all this stuff on it that I don't want out there. If they put a robots.txt up 5 years later, we retrospectively take stuff out of the public service, depending on that current robots.txt. So we're trying as hard as we can to be responsible to other people's content while still saving something that we think is culturally important.
Archive team doesn't really follow robots.txt religiously.
I would agree. My position is, once you put it on there,
yeah, the way that we do things is we sort of regard it as a you shouldn't go down that hallway, it'll keep you busy forever sort of thing. And we all of our work is done archiving sites that have been hosting user-generated content. And so we assume that these people want their stuff to be out there because it's public or almost public. And so we save it regardless of whether the robots.txt says, no, you can't have my stuff. Because they're not the ones in charge of the robots.txt.
Right, and user-generated content isn't our focus in particular. So we do have a slightly different mission involved. But, you know, I do think that, you know, the Wayback Machine is made up of other people's stuff. It doesn't belong to the Internet Archive. And if the person who generated that content doesn't want it in the Internet Archive's Wayback Machine, then I think it's up to them to say whether it's there or not.
Yeah. And we clearly follow robust.txt. Next question.
Two quick questions for archive team. First, an easy one, I think. Instagram, are you guys archiving that or not?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
That's why I asked, actually.
Yeah, actually, so it's on the web, and if you follow any of the links from Twitter, they're all sequential. So if you write a sequential crawler, you could probably pull down all of Instagram's photos.
Cool. Do you want to work on that?
FYI. The other one is Yahoo a week ago.
Sounds like
announced, or rather not Yahoo, Yahoo's CEO, new CEO, announced there's going to be thousands of layoffs. And, of course, one might expect that with thousands of layoffs, you might have some number of additional services that go offline with very little, if any, notice. I was wondering if there's any attempt by archive team to look at some of the Yahoo properties, stuff that may disappear or is likely to disappear, such as, say, Upcoming, which also has sequential IDs.
I'm fairly certain that there is. We declared them to be non-trustworthy a while ago. Okay. And like, if you would like to archive Instagram, you are entirely welcome to join our IRC channel and call yourself a member of archive team.
Okay.
Volunteer effort.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, my question really is sort of more about not the two polar opposites here of corporate versus personal responsibility, or even just corporate or personal data and information, but societal information or cultural. You used the word culture at one point. Community, culture, information that may be created, for example, by a corporation and owned by a corporation, but is of a great public good. And one of the things I'm thinking specifically of is Google Street View, which has done an amazing job of capturing an unprecedented level of detail at a point, well, not one specific point in time, but any location, a specific point in time, what our world looks like today. Now, Google owns that data. Google makes it readily available to the world to use at the moment. If you were to try and scrape that in a conventional sort of manner, I don't think you'd have any luck whatsoever.
You get blocked really fast.
Sorry?
You do get blocked really fast.
Yeah.
Is there something you'd like to share with me?
No, just my friends.
So I'm just curious to know whether anyone has given any thought to how we preserve that if Google were to, for example, decide to shut that down or Google goes out of business someday, and whether Google has given any thought to that legacy that they've created that is of great historical importance.
I don't actually work with the geo stuff at all, so I really don't know that I can answer that. I mean, as far as it goes now, right now, yeah, it's data that we have acquired. If something were to happen to Google, I would personally be interested in not seeing that data go away. I think it is valuable data, I agree.
And it's not just the data itself, but the ability to render the data again, that's a big part of that.
If you, as long as you have the data, yeah.
Yeah,
any enterprising engineer can come along and do interesting things with it.
I think it's stored as a bunch of panoramic images with the location, so you can actually load it up in a panoramic image viewer.
Yeah, I think it can all be exported into MKL files and that, but anyway, so make sure you back that up before they lose it.
Print it out.
I assure you we won't be printing that out anytime
soon. I totally deserved that.
But yeah, I assure you, Google does have backups in different geographic locations in case one gets hit by a meteor or stolen by aliens. Who knows?
At the risk of being a microphone hog, if I could make one point and ask one question, is that okay?
Go for it.
Yeah. Sure.
First of all, to make a point, Duncan, when you mentioned about the Facebook export, that it's HTML, it's not XML and JSON, I'd actually disagree with you and say that HTML is probably the optimal format. Precisely because it isn't the optimal format for machines. It's good enough for machines and it's good enough for humans. And just looking at data, looking at history, it survived a very long time. JSON's relatively new, XML formats come and go. So, but I don't want this to, you know, just get into a formats discussion because then we'll start talking about PDF.
I'm actually going to strongly disagree with what you just said.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Unless you're exporting HTML with microformats.
And tags all over the place.
Thank you. You're exporting data in a fashion that makes it impossible to reconstruct in the manner in which it was originally stored. And that is a problem. So it's the loss of fidelity. And it's a loss of ability for machines to parse it. It's great if you want to look at it. But let's say, you know, 20 years from now when there's super HTML, you're just going to have this old crappy HTML because there's no easy way to pull all that data out of that format. So I'm not saying that, you can do it with microformats and tags, and we do export some things in HTML with microformats and tags.
Actually, it's pretty core to the principles of HTML that the HTML from 20 years ago be readable today and in 20 years, and HTML in 20 years' time will be backwards compatible.
I'm not talking about readable. I'm talking about the ability to extract data in a structured manner, which is very different from readable.
Okay. And trust me, I'm not arguing about the microformats thing. I'm 100% on board with that. I agree.
Sure. I just want to be very clear that HTML readability and the ability to pull structured data out of a readable document are two very different things.
Okay. The question I wanted to ask was more about the issue of personal responsibility. You're making the comparison to personal data loss, and that's how you decide to back up your data, is you have some catastrophic loss. I wonder if you find that when you're talking to people, ordinary people, about this subject, do you bump up against this meme that I seem to come across all the time, where there seems to be this truism of the internet never forgets, right? Google never forgets, Facebook never forgets. I mean, citation needed, right? The data just clearly doesn't support that, and yet somehow this seems to have crept into the public consciousness. This whole book's written about, the importance of being able to forget things online, because the assumption is that everything's going to be online forever, which seems to be completely the wrong way around. Mm. Have you come across that?
Yeah, I've come across that. And as one of the forces that's trying to extend the memory of the internet, it's an interesting argument. Like, yes, the internet never forgets, but only if someone's remembering.
But I think the point of that is that the internet is, there are things that are lost in the internet all the time. It's not going to be the thing that you probably wish was forgotten.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I would refer you to the Streisand effect as an example of that.
Hello, I'm Butch Lazarchak from the National Digital Information Infrastructure and Preservation Program at the Library of Congress. Hello, everybody.
Hello.
Awesome. Very enthusiastic about everything I've heard. You guys have said some great stuff. We're the digital preservation people at the library. So I was thinking about, Brian, you and Duncan were sort of alluding to this, and it seems like the Liberation Front sort of exists to, because at some point a customer problem has been articulated that people want to be able to get their data in and out of these different services. And I assume that Google heard the customer speaking and created Liberation Front for that purpose. And I sense a...
That's not true, but you know, we agree. I created the Liberation Front because we thought it would be an awesome thing to do. So anyway.
So there wasn't necessarily a customer problem there that was.
Well, we were told to do what's best for the users, and focus on the users. And we thought that this is a way of being a better custodian of their data.
Because I sense that there is a customer problem there. You know, people will say, we don't want to lose our data, and we don't trust these services.
Sure.
And somehow that customer problem hasn't been articulated very clearly, at least to the point where services will actually respond to that customer problem. So if you have any thoughts on that, I'd love to hear what they might be. In helping to articulate that problem for these services, or if you feel there is even a clearly articulated problem that the services would take into account.
I think that it's a problem people just don't realize yet. Again, and that's where the awareness thing comes into play, is that people just aren't thinking about it. And you drift away from some service you've been using for 6 months, and then someone says, hey, where's that picture or the bit of this? And you're like, oh, it's over here. And you log in, and it's like, well, sorry, your account's been deleted because due to our terms of service, blah, 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 blah. So had you been thinking about that more carefully, you might have had another copy of that data somewhere else or been paying close attention to it. Got to chat afterwards.
Hi. Have you guys... We're obviously talking about it now, and I don't know if I just have been coming across discussions like these more on the internet or if it's becoming more of in the consciousness. Do you see a need, or have you thought about maybe more solidifying more of a movement where sort of like the Web Standards Project, where the people that are starting to build these sites at these companies now, if they're thinking about data liberation or just, say, archiving when they start at these places, that it will get ingrained as more of these sites become built? Like, is there any thought for that?
I think that there has been sort of a movement. In the past 5 or 10 years, people are more realizing, like, 10 years ago, in 2000, 2001, there was a lot of stuff online, and most of it was still there. Like, things hadn't started to decay so much because it hadn't been around for so long. And in the past few years, past 5, 6 years, all these things that were around forever, from like 1995 until 2003, 2006, they started to disappear because their business plans ran out or they just stopped being interesting. And so that's done a lot to raise awareness of your data will disappear unless you do something about it or someone does something about it.
We also, at the archive, I don't know if this answers maybe the second part of your question. There is an ISO standard for WARC format, which is the web archiving format. So if people are interested in having a way to archive their own sites, using WARC format is now a internationally accepted standard file format to do that in that captures enough data to re-render the site at a later date accurately. So there is a standard for that, at least.
And WARC is supported by wget and Heritrix.
Yes.
Heritrix is a, I believe it's a Java-based crawler for, I think, sometimes Windows, sometimes Unix.
It's an open-source Java-based crawler, okay. Yeah.
And wget is the one that everyone else uses.
All right, I think that's it. Thanks, everyone. If you want to rate the panel on the South by Southwest app, that would be amazing. And enjoy the rest of the conference. Take it easy.
Thank you.